Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, we have another Q&A from our YouTube community members. If you want to be a part of the future Q&As, please go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You'll keep an eye on that community tab. That is where I put out the post asking for these questions. And I love to hear from the audience. I love doing these shows. And it's probably one of the best ways there is to cover as much information as possible each week. And don't forget, you can get the full show every single week by signing up and becoming a member at rofpodcast.com. Not only do you get the full show every week, but you also get access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives, going all the way back to the shows with Sam Cedar. And now let's jump right in to these questions. I received over 200 questions, and I'm hoping I can get to a decent amount. Obviously, I'm not going to cover 200 questions. I wish I could. I just do not have the time. So anyway, let's jump right in. We have a question from James Bias, who asks, why won't Democrats give us somebody younger and more reliable than Biden to choose from for 2024? Somebody not in the pockets of the corporate greed, yet I'm tired of only seeing lifetime politicians. Well, I mean, look, technically, by definition, we've got two people also running for president on the Democratic side who are definitely not in the pockets of corporations. They're definitely not lifetime politicians either. Of course, those people are Marianne Williamson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I'm not saying that, you know, those are the best possible options the Democrats could put out. But just, you know, so we're all clear here, there are technically other people running for president on the Democratic side. Now, the reason we're not seeing more people other than Biden is mostly just because of tradition. You know, it is basically this political tradition, excuse me, to where when you have the incumbent, that's who runs. That's who gets the nomination. That's who the party puts their faith behind, and they don't want challengers. I mean, we've seen the DNC say, like, we don't even want to have debates. We're not going to make this a primary. We're going to pretend these other people don't exist. So even if there were other people, you know, besides Kennedy and Williamson that had thrown their hats into the ring, we still wouldn't see much from them. We wouldn't have debates still, because the party has aligned with their incumbent, because they believe that the power of incumbency is what is going to propel them to victory in 2024. I think personally, Biden's poll numbers kind of show that that may not be the case. You know, we're lucky on the Democratic side, of course, that the Republicans are going to put up Trump. They're going to put up a guy who is going to be in trial in the middle of the primary season. Donald Trump's trial this week, they said, is going to start next March, like literally in the middle of the primary and caucus season. And the Republicans candidate, their guy who's polling at like 60% among Republicans in the primary, is going to be facing a criminal trial. He could go to jail, and he's still going to end up being their nominee. Now, there's other questions that I do have coming up in just a little bit that also kind of address, you know, what if Trump goes to jail? So I'm not going to talk about that just yet. But on the Democratic side, we do need that new blood. We need the younger people. We need, obviously, the non-corporate people. We need people that aren't going to try to make deals with the devil on issues like the debt ceiling. We need Democrats who, when they have majorities, aren't going to sit by and twiddle their thumbs and be like, oh, we don't need to codify Roe versus Wade. Oh, we don't need to expand the Supreme Court. We don't need to do all these things. We don't need to address the debt ceiling this year. And then, oops, probably should have done all of those things. But they didn't do it because they get lazy, they get complacent, because, hey, at least we're not as bad as the Republicans. Voters are still going to support us. I'm sick and tired of the Democratic Party giving us people to vote against on the Republican side instead of people to vote for on the Democratic side. I would love to see more challengers to Biden. And as I've said, you know, based on the field of candidates on the Democratic side right now, I'm gonna go for Biden. That may change. It may not. you know, depends on who else comes into the race, or, you know, if other candidates, I don't know, maybe make a compelling case, maybe disavow statements they've made in the past, maybe realize the errors that some of them have made. Maybe I could change my mind based on that stuff if I feel it's genuine. But right now, I'm for Biden. I'm not thrilled about it by any stretch of the imagination, and I really wish the party would give us something better than Biden. Our next question is from Teresa Thane, who asks, Trump's own ex-attorney said he believes Trump will go to jail. Do you think he ever will? Do I think Trump is finally going to face justice? Like real, actual justice? Yes. Yes, I do. Do I think that Donald Trump is actually going to get to the point where he is sitting inside a prison cell as those bars slam shut? I don't know. That, unfortunately, is something that I teeter-totter back and forth on. There are days when I look at the news, when I look at, you know, what's happening with the investigations, where I think firmly to myself, there is no way this guy doesn't end up in jail, right? I mean, we all have days like that. We see what's happening in the news, you know, whether it's indictment day, whether it's losing the E. Jean Carroll trial. There's all kinds of things that happen that make us feel good about Donald Trump getting thrown in jail. And then there's other days where it seems like this man will never be held accountable. Nothing matters. Everything is fake. Donald Trump's going to get away with all of it. So that's kind of where I am with that. Yes, I do go back and forth on it. I would love to see him in jail if he is convicted. But I also think we're in uncharted waters. Okay, we've never tried to do criminal trials against a former president of the United States. I know other countries have, and they've been successful with it. There's no reason why we can't do this and treat him like a normal person, but that won't happen. No matter what happens, he's always going to be the former president of the United States. Juries will see that. Judges will see that. And that could significantly impact any punishment that they impose upon him. Okay, so even if, like, let's use the Manhattan trial as an example here. 34-count indictment is what Donald Trump is facing. So even if he goes to trial, if he is convicted of all 34 counts, he could still end up not in jail just because of the precedent that that may set, that no judges, liberal or conservative, or even the true moderates out there want to set. So they may say, okay, listen, yeah, you did these things. What we're going to do is we're going to fine you. We're going to put you on house arrest. Yeah, I don't even think community service would be an option. Could you imagine Donald Trump in a jumpsuit on the side of the road with a stick picking up trash? I'd love to see that. Like, that would be wonderful. But I don't know. I don't think so. I guess that would be my answer, is like, will he go to jail? I don't think so. Will he be held accountable? I do think so. Okay? And by accountable, I mean, I believe the justice system is going to go through the process. They're going to find Trump guilty, is what I believe. And so that would be, right, the justice part. Now, the punishment part, that I'm not so sure about. He's going to face the justice. He is going to, you know, face the music, answer the tough questions. But is he actually going to be punished for it? Unfortunately, as of right now, I don't think so. Our next question comes from Wolf CA, who asks, why do Democrats always cave in, even with the majority in the Senate? They can't get anything done. It's because we've got a lot of bad Democrats out there. Let's be honest about it. We've got bad Democrats. And by bad Democrats, I, of course, mean the corporatists. I mean the Democrats who are out there protecting people who ought not be in office anymore. I think at this point, there is a general consensus among the Democratic voters, among the public in general for certain, that Dianne Feinstein needs to resign from office yesterday. Okay? I don't think there's any more question about that. But remember, like a month ago, when we were all saying these things and Nancy Pelosi came out and said that that's just sexism, like you're being misogynistic by saying that Dianne Feinstein should resign. And then, of course, a couple weeks later, she talks to a reporter, doesn't remember that she was even gone for 3 months. We get all these reports about how the staffers have basically been propping her up Weekend at Bernie's style, making sure that she's never left alone. And Nancy Pelosi protected her all the way because, as the reports tell us, it's because Pelosi wants Schiff to have that Senate seat, and she's afraid if Feinstein resigns that Gavin Newsom is going to appoint Barbara Lee to the Senate seat, which would basically guarantee she would win a primary, and then Schiff is gone, Pelosi loses her little buddy. So when I say we have bad Democrats, that's what I mean. They're more concerned about preserving and protecting their own power than they are about actually doing good things for the public. Chuck Schumer, back when he was minority leader in the Senate, he cut deals with Mitch McConnell all the time to fast-track Donald Trump's judicial appointments. In fact, one time, as we were getting close to the December break for the Senate, they were going to have to stay later into what should have been their vacation days because of all the backlog of appointees. Schumer cut a deal with Mitch McConnell to go ahead and greenlight all of those nominees just so they could hurry up and go on vacation. So Schumer cut a deal because he wanted some time off to pack the courts with Republican judicial hacks. Then, of course, we've got bad Democrats like Joe Manchin, former Democrat Kyrsten Sinema. We've got plenty of them in the House of Representatives. It's not even a majority of bad Democrats, but there are enough bad Democrats to where the good ones in Congress aren't able to do the things that the public needs them to do. And unfortunately, you have too many yahoos out there who want to tell you that because there are a few bad Democrats, that Democrats are somehow just as bad as Republicans. I don't buy into that crap. I mean, there's a couple of issues, sure, like foreign policy, let's be clear about that, where there's not a ton of daylight between Republicans and Democrats. They're always going to feed the war machine, and I hate that. But you can't sit here with a straight face and tell me that Democrats are no different than Republicans when we have one party that is literally out there state by state trying to legislate people out of existence. Democrats may be incompetent sometimes, but they're damn sure not evil like the Republicans are. And if we could actually get rid of the bad Democrats, then we wouldn't even be having that conversation anymore either. We have a question. I apologize because I know I'm probably going to get your name wrong here. Renee Maris? I hope that's right. I'm so sorry. But Renee asks, why does the losing party in court not pay legal costs to the other? In South Africa, that is standard practice. If Carrie Lake had to pay for her frivolous election court cases and Trump for his 60-odd similar ones, they would think twice in the future. I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. And with the Carrie Lake thing, it actually makes me, like, super mad. I've talked about this in a couple segments before. But Carrie Lake went to the Arizona Supreme Court with her appeals, you know, through the legal process. And the Arizona State Supreme Court told her, you haven't provided any evidence of anything that you have claimed whatsoever. Basically accused her, like, you're clogging up the court system. They sanctioned her lawyers $2,000 apiece, not her, but your lawyers, who, by the way, one of them, she had two lawyers. One of them happened to be a divorce lawyer. The other one was an employment lawyer. Neither of them had any experience in elections. But those, like, she just went through the phone book, I guess. I'm dating myself with that reference, probably. And said, like, oh, lawyer, here's one. I'll call you. You guys, like, usually I handle divorces, but yeah, why not? I'll handle this challenge. So the lawyers got sanctioned. And as part of the appeal, Katie Hobbs, the Democratic governor of Arizona, the one who actually beat Carrie Lake, said, we would like to put in a request to have our legal fees reimbursed by Carrie Lake. And the Arizona State Supreme Court, after sanctioning the lawyers for filing a frivolous lawsuit, after agreeing that Carrie Lake had no evidence to back up any of her claims, that Supreme Court still looked at Katie Hobbs and said, no. No, you cannot have your money back. We know the state has had to pay $140,000 to fight Carrie Lake's claims, but we're not going to give it back. You've just lost that money. The taxpayers' dollars are gone because you had to fight Carrie Lake's idiotic claims, which we're admitting are idiotic and she had no right to sue anyway, but we did it. Like that's what the state said. And that is absolute BS. But in the U.S. justice system, right, just because you get sued and you prevail after you were sued, that doesn't mean necessarily that you are entitled to get your legal fees back, because it could have been a valid lawsuit. You just prevailed in that particular instance. So I don't think we should have a blanket system of if you lose, you have to pay the other person's court fees. But I do think we need to be a little less strict about not paying other people's court fees, especially in instances like Carrie Lake's legal challenges, where even the courts have said this is stupid. We're just not going to reimburse you because you had to pay $100,000 to fight this idiot in court. That's not okay to me. Shouldn't be okay to anybody else listening to this either. Here's a question from Bella the Cookie. Says, great content, sir. This is where I receive my political news. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Question. Can Donald Trump run for president behind bars? You know, I get this question every time we do Q&As, and I love it because this is something that people genuinely need to know and clearly genuinely want to know. Yes. Yes, he can. If Donald Trump is thrown behind bars, he could be sentenced to life in prison. And depending on the charges, he can still not only run for president, but serve as president of the United States. The only qualifications we have for somebody being elected, well, running and being elected for president, we have the age requirement, we have the citizenship requirement. Got to be a natural born citizen, got to be over 35 years old. That's it. That's all you got to do. It doesn't say, hey, if you're currently sitting in a jail cell, you're not allowed to run for president. That's not in there. That's not in the rules, so he still can do it. Now, as I said, depends on what he is convicted of. Because obviously, we do have amendments to the Constitution that say that anyone that participated in an insurrection or supported one materially or, I guess you would call it moral support, they would be banned from holding any public office in this country at all under that amendment. But only if they get convicted in court of that specific crime. Right now, as far as we know, Donald Trump is not being charged with materially or morally supporting an insurrection against the United States. Now, we don't know what all Jack Smith has, so maybe he's going to go that route. Maybe he wants to charge Donald Trump with supporting an insurrection or causing an insurrection. That would trigger that amendment to where Trump could not run for office. But if that's not what he gets him for, if nobody charges him and convicts him for that, then yeah, Donald Trump could serve time behind bars and be president. And if they're state charges, not federal charges, he couldn't pardon himself. So he would literally be serving as president of the United States from a jail cell. And I know that seems far-fetched, and it is a little far-fetched, but it is currently not out of the realm of possibility. That's how stupid things are right now. Like, that is now a situation, that is a scenario that could happen. We could have a sitting president that instead of being at the Oval Office is having to sit in the dang mess hall with the other inmates and sign executive orders. That's where we're at as a country, folks. That's how crazy stupid things have gotten thanks to Donald Trump and the Republican Party. So yes, to answer your question, he can 100% be president from prison. And maybe that means it's time that we revisit the qualifications for somebody to be president. Maybe we ought to include a little amendment to that and say like, hey, by the way, if you're in jail, you can't do it. If you're convicted of, I don't know, murder, kidnapping, any form of assault, maybe that should also disqualify you too, because technically Donald Trump could go out, kill somebody. Hell, Biden could kill somebody and still serve as president of the United States. I mean, he would probably be impeached for that and removed, I imagine, if he didn't pardon himself first. But yeah, you could have a convicted murderer on death row sitting there serving as president because we never bothered to change those laws. And I think part of that is because the founding fathers never really thought we'd get to that point. they probably had way more faith in people than they should have, thinking like, ah, there's no way they're going to elect somebody in jail, right? Well, fast forward a few hundred years, and here we are. Okay, our next question comes from Deborah Wood. Deborah asks, with the debt ceiling fiasco, why is it not abundantly clear to people that Republicans would rather risk veterans, Social Security recipients, the military losing their pay and benefits, than to concede raising taxes on the extremely wealthy and large corporations? It should be clear. And the reason, honestly, it's not super clear to the public is because the Democrats are not going out there and just flat out saying that. That's what they should be doing. I mean, the Democrats every single day should be out there at a podium, at a town hall event, at a rally, making that point that you're making right there. They should be, but they're not. And isn't that infuriating, right? Biden has the power of the bully pulpit, and he's used it to a small degree, not as much as he should have. But that is the message the Democrats should be sending. Not only that, as I've said repeatedly, and this annoys me to no end here, Democrats can run TV ads even if it's not an election season. I don't even know that they actually know that. You can go down to a local TV station or a national TV station, reach out to them and say how much to run a 30-second ad. How many plays do we get on this? How many guaranteed views? You can run the ads on YouTube. You can run them on social media. And they're not doing that. Like, why? Y'all, as a political party, have the money. You're sitting on millions and millions and millions of dollars. You can put out ads that say exactly what Deborah Wood is saying right here in her question, and you're just simply choosing not to do it. And I'm going to one-up you a little bit here, not to, you know, be that guy. But not only are Republicans wanting to punish poor people, punish the military, take away their benefits, screw everybody over to protect the wealthy elite, they're also currently working on a tax cut package for the wealthy. So not only are they protecting the tax cuts that are currently in existence, they're also, instead of actually negotiating in good faith on the debt ceiling, they're working on a new package that would continue the tax cuts that they began in 2017. This new package would not only change certain exemptions for the wealthy elite, allowing them to keep more of their money, but, well, I say keep more of their money as if, you know, take money away from the government is a better way to say it. I'm sorry. But it would also make permanent the tax cuts from 2017 that are set to expire in 2025. Because for some reason, folks, even when the Democrats had the House, the Senate, and the White House, they didn't repeal those tax cuts for those 2 years that they could have, but they just didn't. That seems to be the mantra of the Democratic Party. Well, we could, but we're just not. So, yeah, that's where we're at with that. The Democrats could be much, much stronger on messaging, but they're making the decision to not be better at it for some reason. Here's a question from Dalton D. Jetter, who says, hey there, Farron, love your videos, and thank you for everything that you do. Well, thank you very much. My question is, why do people, young, old, intelligent, and in general, still vote conservative Republican? What do they gain by doing so? What would change their mind to stop? Man, if I had the answer for that, honestly, I wouldn't be sitting in this chair right now. I'd be out there making millions as a political consultant. But I do have to tell you that I spend a lot of time attacking Republicans. I call them stupid. I call them ignorant morons, you know, and worse many, many times. But to be completely fair, not every Republican out there is, you know, a brain dead idiot. Okay, that's unfair for me to make those blanket statements, but I do it when I get mad. I'm actually not even sorry about it, and I'm not going to try to stop either. I'm going to keep doing that. But there are intelligent people, obviously, on the right. The reason they continue to vote the way that they vote has a lot to do with simple wishful thinking. You know, polls have been done for decades now showing that a majority of Americans, I think it's like over 70%, do believe that at some point in their lifetime, they're going to be millionaires. Like 70%+ of the public thinks like, hey, even if I'm like literally making $2 an hour right now, don't worry, at some point I'm going to be a millionaire. And it's that hope that I think a lot of these Republicans have. They're like, well, listen, I'm going to be a millionaire. Probably not this week, but maybe next week. I don't know. I may hit the Powerball. I may go down to Vegas and try my luck, and then suddenly I'm a wealthy elite, and then I don't want to be taxed to hell and back, so I got to support the Republicans. Now, that's just one, you know, possible reason. I think the rest of it is because people do allow their religion to dictate their politics. I mean, that is obvious. You know, we know that the religious right has this, you know, deep stranglehold on the Republican Party that tells these people, like, don't worry about your financial status. Don't worry that your life sucks and Republicans are making it worse. You need to worry about eternity. And therefore, you cannot vote for somebody who doesn't want to ban abortion. You cannot vote for somebody that doesn't want to ban the existence of the LGBTQ community. You have to focus only on the culture wars. Otherwise, God will punish you and damn you to hell. So I think that plays a very, very large role in it as well. But I think the thing, out of all of these things I've mentioned, the one thing that plays the biggest role in all of it is that people don't pay attention. You know, these issues that I talk about every day, and obviously you're listening to this podcast, so you are a political news consumer. You know, the people who ask these questions on our YouTube channel, y'all are political news consumers. Guess what? Most of the country isn't. So while we're talking about things and getting in depth in these issues and you know, uncovering this Republican corruption and talking about the hypocrisy and the horrible things they're doing, you have to keep in mind, and I have to keep in mind because I forget this every day too, majority of people in this country don't even know this is happening because they don't pay attention. And it's not because they're stupid. It's because nobody wants to be consumed with this stuff. Trust me, when I'm not on the air, I hate talking about politics. I have actually just straight up left family gatherings because people won't stop like asking me political questions. And I'm not trying to be rude to anybody, but it's like, listen, I don't want politics to consume my life. I do it for a living. I don't like to talk shop. And I hate to, like, I don't ever want to be rude about that, but it's also like, folks, look, you don't want to talk about your job when you're not at your job, right? So I fully understand all these people out here who just look at politics and like, I can't even deal with that, because that's how I am when I'm not working. Unfortunately, I'm pretty much always working, but I get it. And it's not only that, I don't want to deal with it. Most people don't even have time for it. You know, they're worried about where their next meal is going to come from. They're worried about the 12-hour shift they're going to have to go pull, and who's going to watch their kids while they're doing it, and who's going to help the kids with their homework, and who's going to pick up the kids from school, and, you know, oh God, the dog's got to go out, and all this crazy crap. Their lives are too crazy to even deal with politics, and you can't fault people for that at all. So there's a lot of reasons why a lot of people still vote for conservatives. But the biggest one, I think, is because they simply don't understand how corrupt that Republican Party has become. Here's a question from Travis Cheney. Travis asks, why is there no maximum age to run for federal office when in the U.S. Constitution there is a minimum age to run for federal office? Great question. Wonderful question. Perfect question. We have to change things. But in this country, we are so reluctant to touch that Constitution, to touch that Bill of Rights. Oh, we don't want to make amendments, and we've made it so difficult to even make amendments that it's virtually impossible, so why even bother? Because the Constitution, by the way, was designed by the people who had power. And the people who had power and who have continued to have power have continuously made it difficult to amend the document that gives them their power. So you see how that works, right? We can't change it because the people who have the power to change it would be affected by the changes. They would lose their power by changing those powers. That's why the document was crafted in the way it was, by the men with power. And it stayed that way through all this time. Now, maybe, as some of these dinosaurs, you know, leave office, or some of them, you know, even move on past this world, maybe we can get some younger folk in there. Maybe we can get some people who understand that we cannot just have these, you know, octogenarians and possibly even nonagenarians running this country. We need the people who are actually going to be impacted by the decisions that Congress makes to be running Congress. We need non-millionaires to be making decisions about the rest of our financial security. We need people who have struggled. We need people that have gone in to buy groceries and have their debit card declined because they didn't have enough money. Those are the people I want serving in government, because those are people who have suffered. Those are people who understand the plight of average Americans. I've been there. I've had my debit card declined. I've been unable to buy prescription drugs because I simply can't afford it. I've been there. And I want people who understand that to be representing me in Congress instead of these, you know, trust fund babies or these millionaires who just decided to get into politics late in life after you'd made $120 million. And I definitely want them out by a certain age. And not because I'm ageist or anything like that. I think those arguments are very stupid. But I do think that we need new people. I think we have to get rid of the so-called career politician. And I also understand that science clearly tells us that as we age, especially when we hit those, you know, 70s and 80s, our brains do not function like they used to. I'm not saying that they all have dementia or a disease like Alzheimer's or anything, but your cognitive abilities do start to decline. That is human nature. That is science. That is biology. And maybe we ought to make our laws based on fact instead of, well, we don't want to hurt the old people's feelings. Sorry, sometimes feelings have to get a little bit hurt in order for us to do what's right in this country. Here's a question from Lenneth. Lenneth asks, do you believe DeSantis' push to eradicate the trans community poses any significant deterrent to people potentially considering living in the state outside of course, the Disney issue? 100%. We're actually already seeing it. Like, we have already seen people leave the state. We have seen high-profile celebrities, Dwayne Wade or Dwayne Reed. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I think it's Dwayne Wade. Say that he's leaving the state because he is a transgender child and my child's no longer safe here. We're gone. I have seen GoFundMe campaigns for LGBTQ people saying, please help us raise money so we can cover moving expenses to get the hell out of Florida. By the way, Memorial Day weekend, where I live for decades now, Memorial Day weekend has been a huge weekend where we literally get hundreds of thousands of LGBTQ people that come to this city where I'm at to celebrate Memorial Day weekend. Well, guess what? They're not coming anymore. And this area, because of that, is now being starved of millions of dollars. And by the way, this is one where I am right now is one of the reddest areas of Florida, losing millions of dollars because of their bigotry. And they don't care. Like, that's the worst part. They don't seem to care. The rest of the state doesn't seem to care. Or they didn't seem to care, I should say. Because now we do have Republican Senator Rick Scott from Florida, Republican Senator Marco Rubio from Florida, they have actually both spoken out about Ron DeSantis' attacks on Disney. They, of course, won't ever speak out on the attacks on the LGBTQ, but they're starting to admit, like, yeah, this dude's gone too far. Like, what's happening in Florida is really, 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 really bad. But it's not until it starts affecting the population that it's going to really resonate with those people. Now, the flip side of that, I fully support anybody leaving this state because you feel like our government is oppressing you or targeting you. That is a real concern that millions of people have, and I will not fault you for leaving this state. I myself am still considering it. But at the same time, when we do that, we're taking those leftist votes with us. So Florida's already trending very red now. And when we have these, you know, non-Republican voters leave, that just increases that Republican majority. So we're basically conceding this entire state. But we also have to, because there are people who literally cannot stay here anymore because their lives are in danger. They are. So again, I don't fault them for leaving. I might be right behind you very soon. And I understand that that means conceding this state to the right-wing rednecks. But y'all are going to keep killing the state. You're going to kill businesses in the state. I mean, you're going to be underwater in many areas within the next 50 years. Sea level rise along the Gulf Coast region, all the way from, you know, Texas and Mexico down to the Florida Keys. Sea level rise in this area along the Gulf of Mexico is actually happening faster than any other body of water in the world. And it's happening even faster than scientists predicted. I actually did a segment on that a couple weeks ago, but because it was climate change, I'm sure nobody gave a damn. But it's a thing. It's happening. So, you know, maybe not just for the attacks on the already oppressed people in Florida, we need to leave, but maybe we also ought to leave because we're running out of time on the issue of climate change as well. We have a question from user Wayne, and Wayne asks, the one thing that nobody seems to question is who and how Trump got all those documents. Who helped him get documents out of the White House? I think someone was helping him. Wayne, I gotta tell you, that is actually a brilliant question. It truly is, because honestly, before that, I hadn't really thought about that, but think about it for a second, right? Do we honestly think that Donald J. Trump went in at night, you know, all the lights are off, nobody else is around, he's got his little box here, he's like, let me take this, put this in here, I'm gonna take one of these, I'm gonna get these, here we go, I got it. Like, no, Donald Trump did not box up these documents himself. He did not load them onto the moving truck, close the door in the back and be like, ah, there we go. Done with that. Nobody knows anything. No, there were definitely accomplices. Like, there has to be. I do not think for a second. I mean, Donald Trump can't even get his own food. Of course, people had to have helped him get these boxes not only filled, but loaded. Honestly, probably Trump didn't touch any of it. He was like, hey, you put this in there and then move it over there. So yeah, that is a great question. Like, what about the accomplices? Do we know who the accomplices are? Is the DOJ looking at that part? I hope they are. I mean, I have to imagine that somebody at that DOJ has had the same thought as Wayne. Like, wait a minute. There's no way he did this by himself. Donald Trump is not a very active person. He is in fact very lazy. So somebody else moved these documents. Somebody else was involved in this. And we do actually know a couple people who may have been involved. One of them is Donald Trump's personal valet, Walt Nauta. It is believed that he may have been one of the individuals who actually helped pack up documents and send them down to Mar-a-Lago. So if Mr. Nauta was in fact doing that, we also know that Nauta has spent quite a bit of time with the special prosecutor, Jack Smith. So it's possible that Nauta is the guy who gave up the rest of the moving team, we'll call them. So hopefully the DOJ is looking down that road, because anybody who was involved in this does need to face the justice system, not just Donald Trump. You got to get everybody, all the cockroaches, because you leave one or two of them there, they're going to reproduce and then you end up with more roaches, right? Here's a question from Verwet 2002 says, can you see the House flipping back to the Democrats as well as holding on to the Senate and possibly increase the seats in next year's election? Yes, I do. I 100% think that's going to happen. And I don't think it's a possibility. I think it is going to happen based on the way things are right this second. Now, ask me a week from now, maybe a different answer. Ask me 2 weeks, maybe different from that. But right now, the way I see it going, based on the public's unhappiness with the way that Republicans are doing things in the House of Representatives, I think, yes, I think the Democrats are on track to take the House back. And again, they don't even have to pick up that many seats. Right now, Republicans only have a 5-seat majority. So Democrats only have to flip 6. And we already know one that is definitely flipping back to blue. George Santos' seat. That is not going to be a Republican seat in 2024 or at the end of 2024. We know that, right? And I think Republicans know that too. So I do think the Democrats are on a great track. Now, the Senate, I will say, is a little more iffy. Because we're definitely, I think, going to lose at least one Democratic seat. But it's a Democratic seat that I'm okay with losing. That's Joe Manchin. it's time for Manchin to go. If we're going to have somebody in that body that's acting like a Republican and siding with the Republicans and talking like a Republican, I'd rather it be a Republican, right? Get the bad Democrats out. That's what I've been saying. Get the bad Democrats out, even if it means replacing them with a Republican. Because maybe we just write off West Virginia, I hate to say that about any state, but maybe we have to do that in order to get some good Democrats in some other areas, right? It's a chess match. You're not going to win all of them. You got to sacrifice a couple pieces to make a killer move somewhere else. And that may be what we have to do with Joe Manchin, just not give the money to him for his campaign because he's facing a very tough Republican, Jim Justice, governor. Let's spend that money elsewhere where we may have a real shot at actually winning. And for the record, I'm sorry, but no, that is not in Texas. I know Ted Cruz is unpopular outside of Texas, but he's not unpopular in Texas. And if we spend tens of millions of dollars trying to take over that seat, we are going to sorely regret it. We regretted it 6 years ago. I don't think that's a smart thing to do. And I hope the Democrats don't do that. I'd love to see Ted Cruz gone. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think that's a seat that's ready to flip yet. Here's a question. It's a rather long question, but I do want to read the whole thing because I love it. It's from Scotty Cameron. Scotty Cameron asks, "Hey, Farron, love the show." Thank you. "I've been watching your show since I started community college after seeing some ROF videos posted on the TYT YouTube channel." Well, thank you again. "I'm now attending four-year college as a poli-sci where I have earned a scholarship for my final semester." Well, congratulations. "My question is, what do you make of Ed Markey as a presidential candidate or contender? I know you're a big proponent of Katie Porter and Jeff Merkley, but I'm curious what you make of the idea of having Ed Markey for president in the future. I know he more than likely won't run in 2024 because Biden's seeking re-election, but what about in 2028? I threw his name out during a recent poli-sci lunch brunch as a good presidential candidate choice on the Democratic side because he beat a Kennedy in Massachusetts, and his debates were the stuff of legend and brings progressive energy to the table the Democrats could definitely use. What is your take on Ed Markey for president?" I have given money to three politicians in my life. Technically, one of them wasn't really giving money. I bought a shirt from the Bernie Sanders campaign. I gave $10, I think it was, to Cenk Uygur's house run, because he's a friend. I gave him $10, what I could. The third person I have given money to just flat out got on their website, sent them, again, $10, because it's all I could do, was Ed Markey when he was facing off against Kennedy in that primary, because I wanted Ed Markey to win. I love Ed Markey. Absolutely, 100% love Ed Markey. I love this question. I love that you brought it up. The only thing I have with Markey is the age issue, which is why I typically go Merkley instead of Markey. And I know that sounds weird because the names are super similar, but Merkley is a lot of those things, except he is a little bit younger. Now, I'm going to take a second here because I want to look it up. Like, Markey, again, is absolutely wonderful, but how old is he? So let's see where he's at. 76. So if we got to wait 5 years for Ed Markey to run for president, he's going to be 81 years old. That's why, as much as I love Ed Markey, I love having him in the Senate. I'm glad that he won that primary and retained his seat. That window may be closed based solely on age. Not just age, but desire, too. I mean, Markey has obviously been around for quite a while now, and I think if that was something he had wanted to do, he probably would have done it. Ed Markey has a wonderful, distinguished career, and I want it to continue as long as he possibly can do the job. But I think, again, given the age, presidential run, I think is out of the realm of possibility at this point. Here's a question. I got to get to this one. From Dave Smith. Dave Smith asks, "John Durham report, Trump was right again." Dave, I don't think you understand. When I put this post out there asking for questions and said I would answer the questions people ask, by questions, I think you got confused because you may have thought I meant random, stupid, idiot statements instead of, a question. Because your thing here is not a question. It's just John Durham report, Trump was right again. And you don't even have the right punctuation in there either. I mean, I could sit here for the next 30 minutes and tell you why everything you said in those, seven words is wrong. But I've already done plenty of videos talking about why the Durham report was a giant nothing burger. Donald Trump was not right about anything. Certainly not right about something again. I would love for, Dave Smith here to tell us what else Trump has been right about, right? I think we should all collectively ask Mr. Dave Smith to please come back and elaborate on all of the things Donald Trump has been right about. And don't just make a list like he was right about this. I want actual examples. If you're going to tell us something he was right about, give us examples of how he was right about it, right? I'm basically asking you to write a report for us outlining all of the things that Donald Trump has allegedly been right about. I will sit right here and wait for that report from Mr. Dave Smith, who thinks that Donald Trump is just right again and that Durham report dang showed everybody's out to get him. Durham report didn't show that, buddy. It didn't show any criminal wrongdoing by anybody that was investigating Donald Trump. Mr. Durham simply said, oh, I wish they would have done this instead of doing this. That's it. That's it. Is that what Trump claimed he would find? No. Donald Trump said they were going to uncover the crime of the century. So he wasn't right about that. He wasn't right about things in the past, other than, you know, when he said, I love the poorly educated, because clearly, Dave, you fall right into that category for Donald Trump. So I'm sure he thanks you for that. But again, go ahead and submit your report to us. Let us know all the things that Donald Trump was right about, because I guarantee you we're all sitting here waiting with bated breath to see what Mr. Dave Smith has to tell us about Donald Trump's myriad of accomplishments, this monument of a man who has accomplished so much. So Dave, we're waiting, bud. Go ahead and send me that report whenever you get it ready. And that's it for the free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But don't forget, if you want the full show every single week, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. Not only do you get the full show every single week, but you get access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives, including all of those wonderful shows hosted by Sam Cedar for so many years.